Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 6 of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio. I will be your host, Miro, for today, and with me is my colleague and friend, Jazz. How are you today, Jazz?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Excited.
Great, yeah, so am I, and for the benefit of our audience, Jazz is working in sales and marketing here at Lid Publishing, and she will be my co-host, as I mentioned. And going on with the show for today, we have a very special guest, and is one of the Lid authors of the book Champagne and Wax Crayons, and it is the one and only Ben Tallon. Hi, Ben.
How are you doing?
We're very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right, I'm good.
Good, good, excellent. And just to give some info to our audience about Ben, he is an illustrator and art director. His work has been created within a wide range of organic materials, and Ben's clients include ginormous brands such as the BBC, Universal, the Premier League, and my personal favourite, the WWE. And how awesome is that, Ben?
Yeah, it's cool. It was top of the list for clients, so I've sort of got to shift my goals a little bit now.
Absolutely. And I think our first question that we usually ask any of our guests is, what inspired you to write Champagne and Wax Crayons?
Before I answer that, I've just got to quickly pull you up on the word ginormous. I haven't heard that since the 90s, so fair play.
I do try to keep it real, but it does come out sometimes.
It wasn't so much inspired, I always say to people it was very much an angry blog to begin with, and which I set up on Tumblr exclusively to vent after about 2 years of freelancing, when I'd had quite a successful couple of sort of debut years after going full time, and then things at a brick wall. I took some time out to travel and I didn't really market myself, and I felt the backlash of that. And then 6 weeks without work kind of resulted in this outpouring of anger on online, on a blog. And what surprised me was people started to connect with that and get back to me sort of saying, oh, I'm in the same boat, yeah, you know, not enough people talk about sort of realities of freelancing and the arts, and it's not as, you know, glossy as everyone would believe. But so after that, I started to get a bit more working again and relaxed, and I kind of thought, okay, well, people are into this, so let's keep doing it. And I made it a little bit more objective and started to put a few positives in there as well. And suddenly, you know, this whole 3-4 year process sort of culminated in a 6 week spell when I just scrapped everything and started again and expanded the story, which was a 1 year window into the freelance world, and then became my kind of entire life story in a nutshell, but very much with the eye on, you know, if someone reads this that doesn't know me, is this ego or is this a story worth telling, which is what I was very strict with myself about, not telling in jokes and putting this valid document down that, yes, it was very personal, because I think it's the only way you can tell that story, because it's such a sort of personal journey and individual circumstances, but that if you take out the nuances and sort of supplant that with your own details, you know, then I think it's a story that a lot of people connected with. So that was the sort of process and the inspiration. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think personally that when it comes to freelancing in general and within the creative industry and arts, it's all about the personal journey and the personal story, and I think the book illustrates this very well. But just briefly for us, I mean, can you perhaps give us an overview of you and how you developed as you went on in your career?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in West Yorkshire, in a town called Keighley, between Bradford and Leeds. And, you know, it was historically a mill town, and I think there was still that mentality of get a proper job. There weren't very many opportunities to pursue anything quite creative or speculative. And luckily for me, I had parents who didn't pressure, but encouraged when I showed a natural instinct to draw or create, you know, and they're both pretty handy at drawing. So it was either football or drawing, and I was rubbish at football. So I kind of very much panicked at 16 when I realised I was rubbish and started to draw a lot and went to college. So anyway, I basically followed that along the path and was blessed with strong tutors who guided me towards illustration because I just wanted to draw everything. And then, you know, graduated, spent a couple of years scratching around in temping jobs, trying to do it in the evenings, finding my style, going through all the dilemmas that everyone goes through in kind of, you know, where do I go? What the hell? This is a huge world full of all these different disciplines. And continue to draw and develop this portfolio. And as time wore on, I met increasingly interesting people and shared studio spaces. And so for 7 years, I've been illustrating, first 3 or 4 years exclusively for editorial clients, and increasingly now into film, TV, set design, writing, podcasting, all sorts. It's really kind of blossomed as I've become more and more militant in making this my brand and my thing, you know. And as times wore on, as you mentioned, I very much realised that it's all about you and the character and finding that sort of detail within that no one else can replicate. That's, you know, I look at any great artist in any field, that's underpinning what they're doing, essentially.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right, and I think Jazz would agree that when it comes to the creative industries, you will delve into all sorts of different angles and all sorts of different aspects of it. You're not kind of stuck to one thing. And going on to our next question is that Ben recently won the Dot London Creative Agency of the Year award. And
congratulations.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. So can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, it came as quite a pleasant shock. I have started to share the sort of wider content that I've been doing. So as I mentioned, this, you know, this book, of course, and I've been writing articles for Creative Press. I do a monthly column for Design Week, and then started to podcast off the back of the book because I wanted to push this idea of connecting people with a really personal story. But there's only so much you can bang on about yourself. So I wanted to then spread that out to a real wide range of people in the arts. And what happened is I've been sharing this content more and more places, so LinkedIn, for example, and going down a more indirect marketing route of putting out the content that people can connect with rather than just pimping out my work to people. It's a dodgy verb. And so what happened was I got, you know, contacted by these guys who were running the Dot London Awards, which is a new domain, obviously, in London. And they'd set up this cool awards thing with, you know, best place to eat, best place to drink, best new business, and then a creative agency category, and suggested that even as a freelancer it was worth going in for. So I thought, okay, well, you know, I don't really class myself as an agency, but it's a nice nod to the wider panorama of work that I've started to do. So I threw my hat in the ring, and the nicest thing was getting sort of put in the shortlist of six people on merit, you know. But then I think, okay, I'm up against people with 10 employees, 15 employees, pretty much an underdog in this situation. But I've always had this really kind of competitive streak, and I went through almost throwing my toys out the pram and saying, no, take me out of the shortlist, I don't like the voting system. It's a popularity contest. I think, you know what, I'm going to go mental on this and I'm going to try and do it. And it just goes to show that when you're the face of the business and one person, people kind of support you and trust you maybe on a more inherent level. And I believe that's what paid off in the end.
Yeah, and this is my personal question, nothing to do with the podcast. So there is one image I associated with the Dot London Awards in your campaign.
Mm.
And that was this lovely poster of a llama and your face on it. Can you tell us a bit about what was the thought process of creating this?
Wow, I mean, what's the thought process of anything that goes through my head when I wake up in the morning? I was out for a walk in Crystal Palace Park with my girlfriend. Yeah, and there's a lovely little farm. And we went there because her friend was up with a little kid, so I was like, okay, we'll go to the farm anyway. The kid's running around sort of pointing at pigs while I'm standing in front of this llama thinking, this is going to peck me in the head at any moment. And it was very close. It kind of got far too close for comfort. I'm like, just hurry up and take the picture. So yeah, I ended up with this picture of a llama, and it made me laugh. And then I thought, okay, well, you know, this underdog situation is crying out for me to do something different. So I went to the extreme of that and posted this image of me stood with a llama. And as I progressed, I thought, okay, let's push that a little bit further. And what happened is I'm in this kind of subversive fantasy football group with a lot of friends. And one of them, who works at the BBC, had some spare time on his hands and decided he was going to put my face on a llama. So I can't take credit for the photoshopping in that one. As soon as I saw it, I thought, right, I'm having that. There's part two of the series, and the rest is history. It got progressively worse, culminating in my head mounted on the wall as a llama. And someone sat in a rocking chair with a shotgun, so that's nice. But, you know, it just goes to show that a lot of people found this quite funny and quite weird to the point of sharing it. And it just goes to show that doing something a little bit different and a little bit too personal.
Yeah, it's gone viral.
Yeah,
gone viral.
So, you know, I'd like to know what percentage that accounted for. But.
Yeah, and for anyone that is interested, there will be a link in the description below for you guys to check out the image himself. And, yeah, praise the llama. Now, going onwards, I know that you recently came back from Minsk. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, yeah, that was a trip that happened, but because of the book, because of Champagne and Wax Crayons, I was contacted by the British Embassy in Minsk, and they'd come across the book and wanted me to go out to the Minsk International Book Fair to sort of do a range of events. We were discussing a couple of talks, a live drawing event, and basically so they could champion the links between Minsk and the British creative community. And yeah, the sort of conversation spiralled, and we ended up putting on my first solo show out there. So it was a really kind of intense 4-night trip, doing lots of events around the clock, but really quite inspiring because the people there were really switched on, very talented and really hungry to develop this identity for Belarusian people in the creative sector. And, you know, I think we found it very mutually beneficial. They all, you know, we took a bunch of books over there and gave them to sort of people who seemed to show the most desire. And it was a fascinating city. Really, not a lot of places people visit it there because there's quite, you know, you've got to get a visa to go there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was brilliant. You know, the architecture is fantastic. The people were great. And all the events were sort of sold out. And it was really kind of exciting to think now, you know, that there's a bit of a presence there in Eastern Europe now for the book and the work that I'm doing.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, and hopefully for Lid, of course, as well, you know. They've sort of given me the vehicle to make this happen, which is really cool.
I mean, did you get any sort of perhaps taste of inspiration of the kind of art and culture within the city or perhaps the people while you were there?
Mm.
Or was it more of a sort of an educational experience for them learning from you?
I think very much both. You know, for them to get a flavour of the inspiration and how someone from Britain who's based in London is making a living from this stuff is great. And for me personally, no, it was, of course, yeah, very educational on my front. I was taken around a number of creative studios in the city. The Union of Designers in Belarus are great. It's like a real creative collective. I think about 10 people are based there, but they put on a number of shows ranging right across the arts. Really forward-thinking people. They've won numerous international awards for poster designs, for campaigns, all over the world. And so they took me in for a couple of hours and, you know, I came away with about 10 books that they gave me, which was fantastic, full of all these amazing poster campaigns and all sorts. So it was great, you know. I came away from there really inspired, you know, as inspired as when I went to New York and a number of other places. It was, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know whether this was just me going and sort of spreading the word about the book, but it turned out to be so much more. Like I say, you know, great for both camps, I think.
Yeah, absolutely great. And if anyone is interested in finding more about Ben's journey to Minsk, in the description below we will have a link to a gallery of images that you can check out and see for yourself all the different kinds of art and, you know, inspiration presented throughout his journey there. And going forward, I think Jazz has a bit more technical questions than me, I think. So yeah, please, Jazz, take it away.
Okay, so this is a sort of topical question. I don't know if you're aware of Nikki Morgan, Education Secretary. Yeah. So recently she sort of made a bit of a statement saying that students who take arts and humanities subjects, GCSE and A-level, are limiting their career choices. And in the UK over the last 10 years, we've seen a 50% decline in students taking these kind of courses for GCSE and A-level. And there are even plans to take them out of the English baccalaureate. As you've sort of spoken about being encouraged by your parents, but not necessarily mostly at school, what would you sort of say that, you know, is there an issue that we need to address in schools today to sort of cultivate like new creative talent?
Yeah, very much so. I think I think it's sort of preposterous what she came out and said, and it baffles me when you consider that we're living in a country where the creative industries, you know, represent over 8% of the jobs market.
Yeah.
And I believe, I'm told, possibly the, if not one of the fastest growing sectors out there. And when you consider that we're in a world now that is becoming increasingly digital, increasingly fluid, with all these sectors crossing over, and I'm not just talking about the arts, I'm talking about business, technology.
Yeah.
I had John Newbegin on the show, on my own podcast, who is, John's an OBE and he's very well respected, and he's the head of Creative England. So I found an article responding to Nikki Morgan's comments from John in The Guardian, and he talked about, you know, in this increasingly fluid world with more and more demand for creative thinkers, lateral thinkers, people who can adapt to problems and really move and adapt with the times, we're going backwards in the education system, creating even more of a box checking culture because of Ofsted and because of the way things are ranked. So I don't understand what they're not seeing in that, you know. Maybe they don't want independent thinkers, I don't know, you know, that's going down sort of conspiracy thinking theory, but it just baffles me completely because it not only breeds a sort of nation of dickheads who can't think for themselves, but
millennials,
you know, who need millennials, yeah, well, we'll go with millennials, but, you know, people who need to be told what to do, that's not the way the world works anymore. What the hell, you know, it's like, and I think people think when I get on about this stuff that I'm saying we should all study art and go and be artists, and it's far from it. it's very much about collaboration, spending time with other people, brainstorming, and all these things that create independent thinkers. You can adapt that to any discipline. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if you're a mathematician, a scientist. You need to think and come up with ideas. And that's when we're knocking that out of the creative education system, I don't know where that leaves us. There's a massive divide going to happen between the two, you know.
Yeah.
So it seems crazy to me. I think the problem stems from the fact that it's almost intangible. You know, how do you mark, how do you assess
exactly, yeah.
happiness and progression? Because as we all know, it doesn't matter what you're studying. If you're not feeling it, you're not motivated, you're not going to progress. If you're loving doing something, you're going to want to do it more and more, and you become addicted to it, you know. I lived with a primary school teacher for a year who was sort of up in arms about this. And he worked at the Greenwich Millennium Primary School, who developed this reputation of being a really forward-thinking, creative school. And one great example that I always tell people about that is that he had to teach Macbeth as part of his syllabus to 10 and 11-year-olds, year 5 and 6. And instead of sitting him down with a textbook and saying, right, read from page 42, which is all we ever did in school, and you've got this kid who's stuttering, reading out loud, nervous as hell, and doesn't even remember what they've read. It's like, what the hell? What he did is cover all the tables in cling film, divide all the kids into groups within this story, and create a murder mystery in the classroom. How fun is that when you're a 10 and 11-year-old? But they came out of that so inspired by the story, so, and really put thought into this thing and broke it down in their own individual manner. And the results spoke for themselves. They got outstanding results across the board in all subjects for a very similar, slight shift in mentality in the way he's teaching, very simple methods. And it speaks for itself for me. So, you know, that's what I'm talking about. You can use those methods to get kids inspired and engaged using, you know, connecting with personalities. But if we're just going to tick boxes and go for outstanding, then it's going to result in unhappiness. And I don't want to go down a road of talking about later life, but if kids are disillusioned and not interested in anything, then we all know where that leads. You know?
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a bit of a rant, but I'm quite passionate about it.
No, I am too. I'm the same. Because I sort of feel like this constant battle where I did a creative degree and a lot of people, you know, viewed my degree as a soft subject and they didn't take it seriously. And luckily I had parents who encouraged me and said, you know, you have to do what you enjoy doing. Mm. But there's so many people out there who aren't encouraged by their teachers and by their parents and end up, like you said, going on to be really unhappy. So what kind of advice do you think you'd give them at this stage?
To the parents?
Well, to both, I suppose.
To both?
Yeah.
It's difficult because you have to say, to follow your heart takes balls, it takes determination, and it takes patience. And those things are not easy to come across or believe in, you know. It's like the reason this book is sat on the table in front of us today is because I felt utter disillusionment and really kind of pissed off with what I was doing and kind of lost heart in it for a little while. Luckily, I found this silver lining of putting that into positive context, but not everyone has that. Not everyone has that resolve to do that, and will give up quite easily. So it's easier to say to a kid, look, you can get a position of employment, we can see that on paper, we can see that on the jobs market, as opposed to saying, follow your heart into this crazy creative industry where, you know, you might want to become an actor and all these things. They all seem like such far-fetched ideas because they are essentially dreams to people who love that. But if we don't have that in life, then what do you have?
Exactly.
You know? But the flip side of that is because of the digital environment now, there are so many positions, you know, you don't have to just go and become a movie star. Or the Brit Awards, whatever. That's not the way the world works anymore. So many interesting positions now that fuse these disciplines. And I would use a point that John Newbegin made on my podcast, where he highlighted that they'd done a study in Bristol on the way businesses sort of functioned and combined different people from different backgrounds, and there was a massive sort of advance, you know, a much higher percentage of the businesses that had an equal balance of people from creative backgrounds, tech backgrounds and business backgrounds.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, if you just have tech people, you can have all these amazing things but no idea how to implement that in a social context. Business, you're going to have, you know, you're going to have people thinking primarily about sort of money and all that stuff. And arts, wonderful ideas, but where's the reality?
Direction.
But the three together, I mean, it was proven that all these businesses had massive advances and making a lot more money when they combined the three.
Yeah.
And that I think that applies in so many areas, in education and all sorts. You need to about the balance.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just believe that if you've got a dream or something you're into, you have to pursue it. You can always fall back and go and study other things.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, it doesn't matter how good you are at something, if you don't love it, you won't progress in it. I don't know. I think you have to lead with happiness.
Yeah.
And I really do believe that whether it's business or whatever, that's what brings results. So if a kid's got a desire to do something, they have to be given the opportunity to do that and grow as a human being, you know? And as a result of that, even if they don't go on to do it, they will defer and do something with much better mind behind it, you know? I just think it's about growing people, developing people, you know, and enhancing personalities. And that's what connects with people in any industry.
Mm. Yeah. That's interesting, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, there you have it. It's right from someone who's gone through the journey and has experienced, you know, personal growth and how it works, essentially. And I absolutely agree with everything that Ben has said. I think in my personal experience as well, I had a similar one to Jazz's, where a large part of what I studied and what I went through wouldn't be the same without creativity, without being, you know, given the option to, you know, express yourself as a person and apply that as you progress in your studies, in your work. And again, it does help in business, you know, brands that can work with that effectively are the ones that rise to the top.
Yeah.
And I think we can't really afford ourselves to simply say, well, this is this and that is that and that's it. Everything changes, everything's intertwined today.
Yeah.
Especially in places and industries like tech, where, you know, you have all sorts of, you know, new app developments and tech startups and, you know, branding and this and that. It's an integral part of it. And if you just kind of step back and say, well, whatever, we're not doing this, we're not doing that, you're just limiting yourself.
Mm.
And there's a wider social implication of that as well, as Ben has mentioned. Yeah.
Look at any pioneer in mind over the last whatever, you know. You can have all the technical skills in the world. We talk people like Stephen Hawking, Einstein, if we want to start naming big hitters. Absolute pioneers, like, you know, have all the technical skills and all the greatest minds in the world. But you take the creativity away from that and the idea and this ability to come up with new ideas and push that new places, and it all falls flat, because then you revert to textbooks and preconceived ideas and you stay with what we already know. So, you know, we're not even talking about art in any of those fields. It's just thinking different and the lack of fear to try new ideas, and those skills are best learned in the arts or by using the arts to combine with other subjects, as we talked about.
Yeah,
you can't just box them all off and but, you know, it works the other way. If I don't combine with tech people and people who can implement, you know, who see the commerce in my artistic ideas, then where does that leave me?
Yeah.
I'm left in a studio like a lot of traditional artists, painting but making no money from these potentially great things.
Yeah,
you know?
That was another question actually I thought of, doing art, like your art subject, but then be it going freelance, obviously there's a huge amount of business and you now sort of run your own business.
Yeah.
So like, how has that kind of, you know, developed over the time? I guess you're not taught those skills when you like an illustration degree, so has that been sort of like all self-taught, or you've collaborated, got advice?
It's been collaboration,
yeah,
of course. I mean, I picked up my own ideas and added my own twist to everything, but I can trace back this whole line of mentors throughout my career, whether it's tutors, people in industry that have been kind enough to go beyond the call of duty and, you know, make suggestions for my work with, let's say, 30 years experience added to my 3 or whatever it was at the time, to advance those ideas, you know. I work with a guy at WWE in New York, and he's originally from Bolton, so we became good friends very quick because of the Northern England and the football connection. So he was not only able to get me my dream client, but to this day continues to send me examples of things that he thinks I would like, would give me ideas. And off the back of that, he sort of commissioned me to do painted lettering for these sort of spreads, which has evolved over 2 years to become actually a whole different brand aside from my illustration that I now make probably like 40% of my income from.
Wow.
You know, we talk about the book leading to the podcast. That's independent thinking. That's lateral thinking, you know, like I've mentioned before. How many artists do you know that are now suddenly going into broadcasting? There aren't that many. But I get excited by this opportunity to break into new areas.
Mm.
And it's a business mind that does that, you know. Suddenly I've got this book out there. Do I just rest on my laurels and stick to that forever? No, I continue to push it. But there's a story told within that, as I mentioned to you guys. You can broaden out and you can tell the stories of others by virtue of that. I understand the value of being indirectly connected to it just because I'm the presenter of this podcast. So, you know, I'm sharing all these other creatives' work. Some people might shy away from doing that because they might think it's shooting yourself in the foot, but it's not, because every show I'm connected to. So, you know, every time that podcast's shared, my name is attached to it. That's a very entrepreneurial decision, because I know that the indirect ripple effect from that is getting my name into all these conversations. And, you know, increasingly now I'm seen as almost, you know, I guess, an authority in my industry. I care very much about the arts, and I'm always writing new pieces, thinking about new ways of doing things. And that's business, you know. So I have to make money from what I do. That at the end of the day, we all do, to exist doing it. I've been doing it full-time for 7 years, and I didn't do that by just sitting at a desk drawing. That's the bottom line, you know. It's like, I'm out there always thinking about new opportunities. If I'm walking past a shop window and I think about someone who might benefit from my work, straight on the phone to their, you know, their PA, whatever, and I'm not just saying, here's what I do, I'm telling them why they need it, why, you know, in the nicest possible way, I'm suggesting ideas, and I'm trying to get to the person and have a coffee and that kind of stuff. And that comes from, you know, good tutors who've put me in rooms with other students that are different to me, and learning people skills. You know, it's all business. Mm. We all have to get our head around it.
Yeah, no, definitely. So obviously in your book you talk about sort of the highs and lows of freelance, and, you know, how you broke into it and things like that. I've got quite a few friends who have been, you know, pumped out of university, kind of clueless about how to start their career. Mm. The graduate market is brutal. It's probably the worst it's been ever recorded.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are now thinking that freelance is their option. And I've got one friend who's doing quite well out of it. But I think that they all kind of, you know, struggle with the same things that you do. So what kind of advice would you sort of give, like, young creatives starting out? Would you necessarily say that freelance is best option, or to get some experience in, you know, more consistent work first?
I don't think there's a right or wrong option. No. I think you can learn equal amounts in both. I just believe that you have to immerse yourself in people, be places, network, go on, whether it's an employment or not. I think you have to sort of force your personality on people in a way, you know.
Yeah.
I could give you countless stories of people who have sort of come from unis, and, you know, very chance stories of rocking up at offices and just through a conversation over a common interest have ended up landing a job.
Mm.
I don't think we live in a world anymore, and back to the point about education, I don't think we live in a world anymore where you send off a CV, go and sit at a table for an interview and you get given a job. Of course, that's a process that still happens, but I think you're far more likely to benefit from just being a part of it and going and meeting people. There are, you know, being in London, there are countless networking events in the evenings, meet up for anything from formal talks to just meet ups in pubs where everyone comes and gets pissed and then swaps business cards if they remember, you know. And it's like, it's a mix of doing that, and you have to do it. So I finished university and, you know, 2 years in full-time jobs, spending my evenings in this freezing cold garage drawing and sort of trying to get my head around it. And I was living in Preston, a small town at the time. And it was the meetups in that shared studio space of five other people that sort of, you know, being around other people every day with different ideas. And I just think you have to immerse yourself around people and be a bit of a vulture for opportunities. It doesn't matter whether that's in employment or freelance. I think that's just business.
Mm-hmm.
People meet, people have beers, people have coffees, and then that's where the most effective relationships are formed. People get lazy and sort of rely on, you know, LinkedIn, social media.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a foundation, especially now, because people are switching off to digital a little bit. Everyone's deaf to emails because they're getting that many, that much nonsense on Facebook. You're fighting against ultrasounds and cat videos, so you're going to lose, you know, at the end of the day.
I have to hide those people.
Yeah, exactly.
Fun fact, guys, before we go on, actually, speaking of cats, the cheeseburger website, which is all the funny cat website, has apparently been bought by someone for some ridiculous price.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm proud to say I have no clue what you're talking about.
Yeah,
thank God. She's obviously pretending, she knows exactly. She's got like a share within the
I am not a
website.
Cat person, I hate cats.
But
I mean, publishing does not endorse hating cats, by the way. We do like cats. Cats are cool.
I would point to Miss Led, who is an illustrator on my agency, and she's fantastic. And she's amongst the most popular artists probably in the world at the moment. She's really sort of in, and but very talented and very hardworking. The most inspiring part of her story, in my opinion, was the fact that she spent 8 years after graduation from a fine art degree doing very little, working in full-time jobs and disassociated from the arts. After sort of 8 years, she ended up teaching, I believe, on a course or running a workshop, one or the other, which sort of led in this unconventional path to getting into illustration, and now she's right up there with the best in the business. And it's like, you can't put that in, you can't teach that or put that in a step-by-step format. So I think you have to just go out and impose your personality on the world and be a part of it and go and talk to people. And like I said, think different.
Yeah.
Come up with something that's your idea and put it in a format that's engaging and interesting and send it to someone. I sent a package out last week to Damon Albarn's manager with a copy of the book, a hand-painted version of her name, a handwritten letter all done in ink. I did all the address in ink, made it this beautiful sort of bespoke package, sent it out. I'd got the connection through a guy on the podcast who worked with Damon years ago. I followed it up with a couple of emails, and eventually she got back and said, right, I've got time to meet for a coffee. I don't know where that's going to lead, if anywhere, but to get Damon Albarn on my podcast and meet the guy would be incredible. Like a dream come true, but also massive for the show. That was thinking on my feet. That was like, how do I stand out from a crowd? I can't email this lady because she probably gets 150 emails a day, probably more. You know, so it's obviously got me this far. And again, it's just thinking different, doing something a little personal and taking the time to look for who's the person behind the job, you know? I don't know. Maybe I'm rambling a little bit, but I just think you have to get out, be a part of it. Too many people leave uni and think, right, I've got this degree now, you know?
I'm so
yeah, that's how the book got titled. I said, you know, I graduated and where are the women, the fast cars and the champagne, you know? It wasn't, it didn't happen. I was sat in a bedroom in Preston at a garden table. So that's where the title of the book comes from, and it's sort of an ironic twist on it, but it's very true. You can't just sit there and expect the world to come to you to go and fight for stuff, you know? And it can create jobs, you know? There's a position for everything now. Go and tell someone that that's what you need to do and that's how you can benefit their company. You can definitely create jobs. I've done it numerous times, you know? So it is tough, and it, like you say, the record lows and things, but I certainly think there's something to be said about what we talked about in the education system, and people are sort of spoon-fed everything they know, and suddenly when you have to go and apply that to the real world, it doesn't work like that. You have to come up with your own ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we're on the book, I think this is kind of the question that we ask all of our guests, is what books are you currently reading?
I am currently reading The Night Circus by Erica Christensen, I think. Picked it from charity shops because I like the sound of it, and it's very good. I quite like my fiction, quite into fiction. I just actually just finished Charlie Chaplin's autobiography before that as well, which was a massive inspiration. We're talking about a guy with completely different reference points to me, you know, living in, born in the, you know, the last century, well, the century before last, you know, no technology, using telegrams and becoming the biggest stars in the world. But the most exciting thing is the core values of the things that he talked about in the success from being an actor and being in the arts completely link up with all my ideas of what makes for successful now despite technology. So I think the underlying talent is always is there. It's about using these tools that we've got effectively, you know. And that was a huge buzz. So yeah, there were then sort of two that I've recently read.
Absolutely great. And I think with that, I would like to thank you very much, Ben, for joining us
thank
for today's
for
podcast.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, and if you would like to know more about Ben, you can find everything that you will need at bentalent.com. And as always, notes about today's show and links will be provided below in the description and on our website, which is www.lidpublishing.com. And of course, you can find us on all forms of social media by searching Lid Publishing in your preferred platform. And also, I would like to thank Jazz for helping me with the podcast today. And thank you very much for listening.